Oh, man, the new year is closing in real fast. Faster for many who are going to be involved in this Montana legislative session right around the corner. Going to be unique in a number of ways. One way is there's this large budget surplus. No, that doesn't always happen, especially the size of this. Projected maybe to be $1.7 billion. That's one thing. Also, a supermajority of GOP members to guide this 90-day session. You know, given those two scenarios, anything in our past that could possibly tell us what to expect? We're going to look at that today. Ask author and public figure John Bennion, whose book, Big Sky Politics, is critically acclaimed for its comprehensive and well-researched look at Montana's political history. We'll go back. And then also, he was a member of the last Districting and Apportionment Commission. We'll talk maybe about those maps. He's also the author and the father of Jack Pant. We'll talk to him about that today on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today, 866-627-5483, or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thank you very much. Hope you guys had a winning weekend. Just went out there and killed it. I know the cats did. Yeah, still talking about that. We'll probably have a little fun with that later on in the week. Thank you for being here. Two decades strong, working on three, and working means, working, keeping, thinking, and getting out there and talking to folks. We got this legislative session upcoming. We'll talk more about that. We're going to have special coverage from any of our news affiliates here on the Northern News Network, which we are, a part of. But let's ponder this, this super majority, which means basically they have a 2/3 and it's a veto-proof majority of GOP members. It's mostly unprecedented around the country, and certainly in Montana too, although there has been a large GOP majority for especially that last session and for a number of years. There's a book out there that I have. And in fact, let me first welcome the author of this and someone you probably know fairly well, John Bennion, who's worked as the deputy attorney general for the state of Montana for a number of years. And just right now I'm with Montana Rail Link and looking forward to talking to him, too, about this book, these series of children's books that he wrote, too. I didn't say that was on the agenda, but John, good morning. How you doing?
Tom, it's great to be on.
It's okay to put Jack Pants on the agenda?
Absolutely, anytime.
That's good. Because that's an interesting part of the story, too. Let's start. Where do you want to start with this? What's the most interesting and intriguing thing to you when you look at this next upcoming session, especially as and the book that you wrote, Big Sky Politics, do you have another version coming out of that? I wouldn't doubt it. It was very critically acclaimed.
So, Tom, yeah, it's been almost 20 years since the last election that was in Big Sky Politics happened, and so much has happened in Montana politics since then, and that is something that I'm taking a look at, both expanding it to update what's happened in the last 20 years, but look at more elections, have more narrative and things like that. What's funny is the first version has about a third of the book is just election results, and now you can find those online. 20 years ago, you had to go photocopy them at the Secretary of State's website. So it would be good to update it and also expand and include just more analysis.
I came across your book almost at that same time. It was about 20 years ago, and it was very well written, very well researched, and very well received as well. In fact, after I bought my copy, I loaned it out. It was one of those books. It was one of those books that once you looked at it and you had an interest in Montana politics, there was a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah, there's enough nerds like me out there and like apparently like you, Tom, that want to look at, what is in our political DNA here in Montana? Because oftentimes people just try and lump us up in with other states. But there really is a very unique narrative about Montana politics that's worth sharing it for the nerds and the political analysts and things like that. They want to understand a little bit more of the history piece, how people got elected, how they, campaigned, and what that might mean for Montana's future.
What would be that unique narrative about Montana politics?
Well, you know, Montana sits in the Rocky Mountain West, and if you look at a lot of states around us, for a long time they've been Republican through and through. And while Montana has typically always supported Republican presidential candidates going back the last 60 years with just a couple exceptions, we've also had very competitive elections when it comes to governor races. We've elected more Democrats to the U.S. Senate than Republicans. And so it's not quite as simple as people say. Now, that could be changing. You know, things have really gone a deep red in Montana here in the next little bit. And so people are wondering, like, is Montana finally just a red state like the other states around us? And I think 2024 will be a pivotal election to tell that story.
But these things ebb and flow, because I can remember a time, and your former boss, Mike Halligan over at Montana Rail Link, a longtime legislator, again, many years ago, still being involved in this process, when he came in and did an interview with me at a radio show in Missoula as the new minority leader. And he had talked about, you know, being faithful in opposition, so to speak. I mean, it was a different scenario. But at that point, it was relatively new that the GOP had taken control. I don't remember what year that was. We're probably talking you know, even before 2000.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. The pendulum swings back and forth. But right now, kind of since 2016, which is when, you know, Steve Bullock was able to get reelected, but nearly every other election went the Republican category. But then you have like 2018. Tester actually had his best election in 2018, despite Trump coming out four times. And then we come back to 2020, where Republicans just dominated. And of course, Republicans had a pretty good election this last cycle as well. So, you know, the pendulum swings. And so I know that I'm sure Senator Tester is looking at some of those different factors that have occurred in the last few elections. But is it out of reach for him to get reelected? Absolutely not. And so it's just a matter of how quickly is that pendulum going to swing back.
And that you can kind of count on is that when you're in as a majority party, you have to remember what you're doing, because the shoe will be on the other foot at some point. The shoe is now on the right leg, a right foot, I guess, if we go with that kind of analogy. What do you expect?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you, as you pointed out, we do have a supermajority in the legislature for the first time ever. Also coincides with having a Republican governor, so there's a lot the Republican majority can do if they all agree with each other. But that's the other piece of this puzzle, where people just kind of assume, well, Democrats, you know, they fall in one camp, Republicans, they vote against each other. It's not that simple. When you go up to the legislature, there can be some wide agreement amongst party members on some things, but a lot of these different aspects of amending the Constitution, I suspect there's not going to be very many at the end of the day that get across the finish line. And then going forward, if you look at 2024, we're going to have a redistricting process that changes the map. I suspect Democrats are going to make some gains in the legislature. They're not going to be able to probably take over the legislature. But that's another piece to this, where Republicans are looking at this window of opportunity, I think, to really try and have a conservative agenda.
With John Binion, who's a native of Billings, Montana, lives in Clancy, author of a book that has drawn a lot of notice, but it talks about Montana's history, Big Sky Politics. We'll talk about some of his other works as well. We saw him in 2009 and 2000 through 2013 as a member of the Montana Districting and Apportionment Commission, and also, as I noted, Chief Deputy Attorney General when he served with Attorney General Tim Fox. John, as people look at this session, and we're looking at it from the outside, and you talk about how complex it can be on the inside, but, you know, what's the first blush for the public when they're looking at maybe what can be accomplished? We looked at the issues here, and I want to get to that in terms of this historical view. When you look back and you've seen maybe dominant parties in the legislature. Is there some kind of narrative that comes out of that in terms of how, you know, what kind of grade they got?
Sure. I mean, when I talk to people about the legislative session, I say every legislative session is different and every legislative session is the same. And the way they're the same is kind of the cadence of it. You know, people show up in January, they're generally in good moods, they're shaking hands, they're smiling and all of that. And then by February, they get really busy. By March, they've already started to vote against each other's bills. And by April, they swear they're never going to run for the legislature again. But every legislature is also different. And in this case, this session is going to be historic in terms of the budget surplus, as you already pointed out. The last time we had this large of a budget surplus was back in 2007. We had Schweitzer as governor. We had the Republicans narrowly controlling the House, Democrats narrowly controlling the Senate, and it was one of the most contentious sessions in a generation. They didn't even pass a budget by the end of the session. Mm-hmm. And so there's opportunities when you've got a lot of money, a big budget surplus. They're talking about historic tax relief, investments in some mental health services, the state hospital. And obviously when there's inflation, then there's going to be costs associated with the government where those are going to have to go up. And so, but when you've got money, sometimes those are the most contentious sessions because people have a lot of ideas on how to spend it.
The governor's put out a proposal, which I feel is fairly balanced and also tries to address the other side of the aisle, I believe, in some ways. What does the other side of the aisle need to do in this circumstance to get some of their priorities met?
Yeah, when you're in the minority and in a significant minority, you know that in order to either stop bills that you don't like or to get some things across the finish line, you've got to form relationships across the aisle. You have to have open communication with the executive branch. They call it the second floor of the Capitol. That's where the governor is. And so you just know that you have to do that. So when I've talked to some Democrats, when the governor unveiled his budget, he talked about, or Democrats have talked about, the earned income tax credit, saying like, oh, that's great. They've talked about the investments in mental health and state hospital and positive lights. They also think that some of the tax relief benefits wealthier individuals, things like that. And that's typical of Democrats, some of the narratives. There are some Republicans that, applauded what the governor put out, and then I suspect there'll be some Republicans that want to go further. More tax relief, more permanent tax relief, maybe not having as much growth in government. So these kinds of things, even though the budget is proposed by the governor, it is going to look very different at the end of it. It's the legislative sausage making that everybody talks about, and it's a process that's generally worked, and it has its flaws, but, we're going to see it unfold here in the next 90 days.
John Banyan is with us. We'll take a break and come on back. Author of Big Sky Politics. We're looking at this supermajority of the legislature and some of the questions that to come out of this in terms of do new rules go into effect there? That's one aspect. But I want to go back into Montana's history and look at maybe some of those colorful characters and what can we take from our past that can guide us in our future. Back with more of Voices of Montana in just a bit.
It's that time of year, time to get your seasonal flu shot. The flu shot changes each year because the flu virus changes, so it's important to get yours every year. The flu shot protects against influenza, a severe respiratory illness, and its complications. The best time to get your flu shot is right now, and it's available at doctor's offices, pharmacies, and local health departments across Montana. Visit Facebook/Health406 for more information. Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services.
Elliot will catch us up with news. Update coming here shortly. Tom Schultz alongside. Thank you for being here. Hope you're kicking it this Monday. A good weekend to 22 minutes past the hour. Government Relations Director for the Washington Corporations, the Washington Companies, John Banyan. Also, as I mentioned, maybe I didn't mention this yet, but University of Montana graduate, law degree there as well. Big Sky Politics, authored that 2004. Also, the author of a series of children's books as well that we'll kind of get into. Right now we're looking at, and if we have time too, this, because John Bennion with us had served on this districting and apportionment commission in, from 2009 through 2013. So probably have some thoughts as those maps are out there now too. The final map have been proposed. And so final maps, I should say. Maybe get a comment on that. John, again, I appreciate you being here. Let's go right into some of those colorful characters, I guess, in the past. If you ask me, and I'm kind of live more in the moment and don't have that historical sense, but every time I go back and I look at history, I'm always amazed at how, I guess Montana's history is colorful. It's the characters that I would not say are typical Montanans. Who stands out for you in that long history, politically speaking?
So, you know, there's two legislators that are retiring that aren't going to be coming back this next session that I thought I'd bring up. I've been involved in legislative sessions since 07, and both of them pretty much have been in the mix in all of those sessions. And it's really hard for me to look at a session, upcoming session, and understand how is it going to operate without these two people. And one's a Democrat and one's a Republican. There's outgoing Senator Dwayne Ankeny of Colstrip and Representative Jimmy Keene from Butte, who had served in the Senate and the House. Both of these guys are colorful characters that come from very different backgrounds, but they're both kind of working class, again, Democrat, Republican, that especially on the budget side of things, they dove down deep, did their homework. They understood how to make the budget work for Montana, work for their communities. And they were always great for providing quotes for reporters, very colorful quotes. You know, another person that was in the governor's seat for a long time was Brian Schweitzer. And love him or hate him, he was also just somebody that you could count on to get some headlines and to have a quote in there. One interesting thing about Brian Schweitzer is, even though he was a Democrat, he definitely tried to communicate out to folks in the rural areas. He understood that in order to get a Democrat in a statewide office, you had to go out and talk into the rural areas and maybe be a little bit more conservative on something like guns or maybe when you're talking about coal. And I think somebody that gets that as well is Senator Tester, who comes from a rural area. So one thing that I will say about who we elect to offices in Helena versus who we send to D.C., oftentimes, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, we want people that are going to be a little bit more conservative with our own money to send to Helena, because that's where people are spending our own money. But when we go out and send people to D.C., typically, whether they're Democrat or Republican, we want them to be a little bit more on the spending side. We want them to bring home those federal dollars, whether they're highway dollars, whether they're for water projects, economic development. We want that kind of money brought home to Montana. And that explains a little bit of who we send both to Helena and to Washington, D.C.
I get that totally, because I'm right there in that scenario. And so I know that it's hard for me to justify. I very much worry about our spending in this country, nationally, of course, statewide, locally. I think it's out of control in a lot of ways. But you do somehow, you know, send up a cheer when money does come your way. And it's a fatal flaw in politics, in my mind. Is there anything, in this session that you look back and is there anything that, like, comes to mind in previous sessions that would kind of indicate how this session might go?
Well, like I said, 2007 was the last time we had a budget surplus like this, and I really hope it doesn't go like 2007, they didn't pass a budget by the end. The governor had to call a special session back so they could just pass a budget. People don't understand oftentimes that the legislature, the only thing they constitutionally have to do is pass a budget. If they just came in and passed a budget and didn't pass another single bill, that would be fine. That would be okay under the Constitution, but it is the one thing they have to do. And so what happens is when you have a lot of money, you're going to see the number of bill drafts, and we've already seen this. You know, there's almost 4,000 up to this point, and that doesn't mean there's going to be 4,000 bills. But the volume of ideas that we're going to see on how to spend that money is going to be significant versus if you look at 2017, where we were going into a downturn and the economy looked bad, the state budget looked like revenues weren't coming in, then there were cuts that were happening. And actually, not to say that people felt great about it, but there were fewer bills. There was a little bit more agreement on, okay, here's a path that we have to chart going forward. But the one big difference here is for the last 16 years, so prior to 2020, we had divided government. And we saw for the first time Republicans seize control in 2021. And now the governor's really been in there for 2 years. I do not envy anybody that has to go in as governor in that very first term, that first session, because you have almost no time to put together a budget, put together your staff, put together everything else. Now they've got 2 years under their belt. They have the opportunity to say, we've been able to really look at the state budget, and here's how we're going to do things different. And so that's what I believe Governor Gianforte has done. And that's what's going to make this different than any session we've seen probably since the Roscoe days.
Take a headline break and come on back and ask about how leadership on either side of the aisle will handle the 4,000 drafts right now. How do you handle that much legislation at the, you know, prior to the legislative session? John Bennion is with us right now.
Steel outdoor power tools may be hard to wrap, but once they get open, you'll see why Steel is so easy to give. Find the right gift this year with battery power made by Steel. From mowers and blowers to trimmers and chainsaws, our AK homeowner system of battery tools starts at just $199.99. Shop now by visiting your local Steel dealer or going to steelusa.com/gift guide. Real Steel. Find yours. All prices MSRP available participating dealers while supplies last.
Right back with John Bennion here. University of Montana graduate, law degree there, as well as serving on a number of the Montana Chamber of Commerce for a number of years, government relations there, currently government relations with the Washington companies, and author of numerous child's books, children's books. We'll get to that too, and Big Sky Politics, definitive, I should say. Let me ask real quick, 4,000 bills, anticipated drafts. I know they don't all come across the desk, John, but how does leadership handle that? How do they process that much?
It's very difficult. So in Montana, we have a citizen legislature, and the way the legislative rules work is if you introduce a bill, it gets a hearing. In other states, you can go see where they've got professional legislatures, and I'm not saying we go that direction, but the committee chairman can say, no, this bill is not getting a hearing. You've got to show that this thing has legs. And so there's ways in other states how to handle this glut of bills. But I think one of the people that I saw manage it very well was back in 2011. Mike Milburn was Speaker of the House. 68 Republicans had just been elected after the Tea Party election in 2010. And basically what he said is, look, if you want to bring your bills, nobody's going to stop you. But that doesn't mean everything is going to be a caucus priority. And so he said, here are the caucus priorities. There were things on tax relief, reducing government spending. There were things on permitting reform and things like that. And he said, those are the priorities. And the same is true on the Democratic side. I know that it's tough to try and tell your people, don't bring a certain bill forward because it doesn't have legs and it might harm us in future elections. So it's tough to do. And when you have a lot of new people, which you always have with term limits, then it's a really hard thing to control. And so I just suspect we're probably going to see a record number of bills this next session.
This is less than 30 seconds, but is there a percentage that the number of those bills are just bills to be introduced and not necessarily seriously taken to move forward?
Sure. Out of the 4,000, we're not even going to see half of those probably introduced. I would suspect by the end of the day, there's going to be less than 2,000 bills actually brought forward. These are just placeholders. A lot of them won't turn into bills, but it's still kind of jarring when you look at the list.
I can't even imagine it. We'll be back with more. John Bennion is with us, a government relations director with the Washington Company. He's an author of Big Sky Politics. We are from Montana for Montana. More ahead on Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this. Today, we're all looking for ways to cut our monthly spending without cutting corners. When you become a Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana member, you get a partner who's by your side, helping you get more out of your coverage. See if you qualify for financial help, which could lower your monthly payments to $0. Enroll today at shopbluemt.com or call 1-855-434-BLUE. For over 80 years, Blue Cross and Blue Shield has been here with a variety of plans to fit your needs and budget. And as a member, you'll have access to quality health care and benefits like telehealth and emotional well-being programs. Enrollment is happening now. Go to shopbluemt.com or call 1-855-434-BLUE. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana will stand by you through it all. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana, a division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a mutual legal reserve company.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
Gather round for a true bold tale about a lad from Clancy. I'll try to make it short and sweet, and it won't be very fancy. Those are some of the words that John Bennion wrote in The Adventures of Jack Pants. I want to make sure we get to that because that's a heartwarming story. John Bennion's been around a little bit and knows Montana politics. He wrote a book in 2004, Big Sky Politics, critically acclaimed. And at that time, people go, wow, this is very, very timely. And there's a lot that has changed since then, too, but a lot that stays the same. We're talking about that with John Bennion here. Again, government relations director with the Washington Companies, did the same for the chamber, worked as the chief deputy attorney general for a number of years. Just a lot of history in the state of Montana, being born in Billings and then living in Clancy. John, I appreciate your time here. Let's look, again, supermajority. I don't know if there's any rules that apply, or maybe all those rules kind of get thrown out, but we have some serious issues in Montana. The one that really rises to the top, and it involves our tax structure, which, I mean, that's a mighty web for sure. But we're looking at housing and how do you think this legislature, again, is going to deal with some of these issues? We've been trying to, tackle housing for 20 plus years, and I don't know that we've gotten very far.
Yeah, so on the housing piece, whether it's Bozeman, Missoula, but even in some rural parts of the state, in terms of housing inventory, people have concerns about, can people afford to live in Montana? Maybe that's one of the downsides of Montana getting a lot more attention nationally. But the governor has put forward a housing task force that's looked at different things. So there are some bills that are going to relate to subdivision reform, state laws on what local governments might or might not be able to do. But a lot of what has happened is a combination of low interest rates, high demand of people coming in, and then local decision making around housing. And so there's going to be a fight over, should we keep a lot of those decisions at the local level, or should the state kind of be micromanaging how that occurs? On taxes, I mean, I think the governor really got interested in politics in large part because of tax reform. If you look at back when he was an entrepreneur and when he owned Right Now Technologies, he got involved in little tax bills on employee-owned stock and things like that. And I think he really saw Montana's income tax structure as something that was detrimental to entrepreneurs that wanted to come to Montana. So if you look at a lot of his priorities, both last session, what he's put forward this session, a lot of it is bringing down income tax rates. And I think he also wants to do things on property tax. If you talk to legislators who have been knocking on doors for their elections, they will tell you by far property taxes are the top issue in terms of tax relief. So there's going to be kind of a combination of ongoing tax relief that goes on into the future. There's going to be one-time rebates that people that have houses can qualify for. Of course, sales tax is probably not going to get any kind of traction this session. The governor campaigned against it. So people are really going to be looking at those two taxes, by and large, income tax and property tax.
Well, and it's really hard to I think, fix our tax structure without at least considering that four-letter word, that five, that it's such a dirty word nowadays, but it's got to be part of the discussion to fixing taxes. I'm going to run out of time. I want to make sure we save some of this because you were a part of the, and it's so hard to say this, the districting and apportionment commission after the 2010 census, and we've been talking about it here. You looked over the maps, and you said one thing, and I went back to some of your minutes here regarding you wanted to, you're not looking for, when you were part of that commission years ago, you were not looking for an advantage, but rather to let the process play out as the Constitution intended it. I think that's what we all want when it comes to drawing proper maps here, but getting politics out of it has been impossible, and especially in this last commission when members of the Democratic Commission said politics is going to be one of our criteria.
Sure. So just first and foremost, Montana has a commission. The legislature doesn't do redistricting, but there's always two Republicans, two Democrats, and then usually one chairperson that's appointed by the Supreme Court who can be a tiebreaker. Now, 20 years ago, the Supreme Court put a Democrat in as the tiebreaker. So 20 years ago, before I was on the commission, the Democrats got everything they wanted. They ran the table. Mm-hmm. So when I got on the commission, the bar was pretty low. It's like, hey, I'm at the table. Can I get some of my ideas incorporated into this? And thankfully, a lot of them were incorporated in. And I felt at the time, if we just follow the rules of keeping districts equal in population, keeping them compact and contiguous, respecting minority voting rights and things like that, things will work themselves out because people need to campaign. They need to have good messaging. They need to work. This commission is a little bit different because they've added some criteria that says, well, is it politically fair? Is it competitive? And so they've really gone down deep into what are these districts going to look like for the next 10 years with using election results from the past. And I think that's a little bit dangerous. But when I look at the map, there are things that they have proposed that look fine. There's other parts of the state where they're drawn, where it looks like, man, I'm not sure if anybody that drew these lines has actually been to Montana. But there's still a process here going forward where they haven't finalized it. The legislature gets to give recommendations, but the districting commission doesn't have to accept them, and then they will finalize the map after the session and have that ready to go for the 2024 elections. It never feels great at the end because yeah. You look at the places where you lost and the things where your lines weren't accepted. My running joke is, it's a great way to whittle down your Christmas card list because a lot of your friends don't end up liking the lines that got drawn, whether you drew them or not.
Well, very true. And with them in this particular commission, there were sort of relatively two newcomers and two old timers, for lack of a better word there. Joe Lamson on the Democratic side and, the name just escaped me, Jeff. on the Republican side.
Yes,
thank you. How does that play out? I mean, is that, and Lampson's, this will be his third, of course. Now he just, because of health concerns and God bless you, you know, best wishes to Joe Lampson. He stepped off the commission in October, I think, maybe it was August. Nonetheless, what's your thought of that?
Yeah, I used to rib Joe and say, Joe has been doing redistricting since before I was born,
yeah,
which is true.
It is.
And so I respected his skill, his political knowledge that extended back into the 70s. And, I wish him well going forward. Kendra Miller, she was the staffer 10 years ago. So it, even though she was new to the commission this time, I felt like she already had a head start from her work last session. Dan Stusik, who is raised in Billings, he'd talked to me often during the last go-round when I was going through it, and so I felt like I was able to kind of at least give him some awareness of what he was getting into. But it's a tough job, and it's the toughest job is probably for the chair, in this case, Chairwoman Maylin Smith. You're never going to make everyone happy. And in fact, like I said, a lot of times people just look at the areas where they didn't win and they're kind of grumpy about that. The key though is, you know, 10 years ago, even though I felt like I couldn't vote for the map in the end because there were districts that didn't meet the definition of compactness for our state constitution, there was still a lot to take away from that and say things went fine. We didn't see major lawsuits from it. There was a very narrow lawsuit. And so, you know, the districts played out the way that they should. What's funny, though, is I look back on some of those lines where I did not draw them. For example, in Cascade County, where Democrats drew all the lines, 10 years later, there's not a single Democrat left in Cascade County. In any of that legislative delegation. Same thing with the districts that ran from the Rims in Billings all the way to the Yellowstone River. There's about six of them. The Democrats drew those lines, and now they're down to two. And so it's something that you can redraw the lines. You can hope that they'll go the way that you wanted them to go, but really it still comes down to candidates, messaging, work, fundraising, all of those things that matter in elections.
Great. And that's a question I had answered just plain and simple. You know, no matter what it is that the boundary lines that your district may be, it's still about candidates and public service. And so I very much appreciate that perspective that comes through nonetheless. John Binion, let's talk about it's your other life, so to speak. family man, father to Jack and husband to Jesse, and author of The Adventures of Jack Pants. Tell us about that, John. Are you still doing that?
Well, I just want to first mention my wife, who we are both political nerds, met in college. She eventually got her doctorate here in 2020, so she's now Dr. Binion.
Oh, congrats.
Teaching at Carroll College and MSU, and she's often quoted in a lot of political stories, and so it's fun to watch as she builds her brand, which is very good political analysis, how that's unfolded in the last couple of years, so that there's another Binion in the political world. But yeah, our son, he was born back in 2009. He was born 4 months early, and anytime baby's born that early, there's oftentimes going to be serious complications. And for our son, that meant that he was going to have some lifelong challenges. A lot of that didn't manifest itself until later as he grew, in terms of his mobility, in terms of his speech and all that. And I just worried when he was starting school, because he can't tell his story. He can't tell why he has challenges, that there was going to be difficulty with him and classmates and all that. So when he started kindergarten, and that's been a while now because he's in seventh grade, I wrote some kid books that kind of talked about his early beginnings, sensationalized them a little bit in a kind of a superhero fashion, and called them The Adventures of Jack Pants. There's four of the books out. And they were so well received by the kids. Like, I really don't care if they sell anywhere else. The audience that I was speaking to was his kindergarten class, his peers, and from all that I know, things are going so well in school, and he does so well with the other students, and I think that was a good transition to help explain his story.
Well, praise God for that, meeting that challenge in a very unique way. Are you still doing that? Because there was sort of a call and a need for this, wasn't there?
Yeah, I just felt, at least at the very least, just something for his own benefit. Again, you know, like I was speaking to a limited number of kids there, but it was received very well outside of that group. There were people that helped me get them published, and there were people that bought the books, put them in other libraries around the state, and I would love just to talk about that all day, because working on issues that affect people with disabilities, people that may not be able to speak for themselves, people that need our attention and our help, that's something that is important to both myself and my wife. We both serve on boards of organizations that serve people with disabilities. We've advocated for changes in laws at the state level when it comes to helping out folks with disabilities. And so that's a passion of ours. We wouldn't have had that perspective without our son. And so with those kinds of challenges, there's definitely opportunities and blessings that come along with it.
Heartwarming story, John, of the strength of family and commitment. I very much appreciate that. And good catching up with you. We will talk down the road, eh?
Yeah, sounds good, Tom.
Yep, John Binion, Government Relations Director with the Washington Companies, living in Clancy, Montana with Jesse and son Jack. Worked for the Montana Chamber of Commerce, also Chief Deputy Attorney General, lots to his credit here, but dad, proud dad, most of all. Back with more Voices in just a bit.
Mountain Health Co-op.
Work-based health insurance not working for you and your family? Aware of new tax credits that reduce premiums for dependents? Now's the time to enroll. And if your work-based health insurance isn't working, Mountain Health Co-op has you covered. With benefits like dental and vision exam reimbursement options, many zero cost share medications, and telehealth access, Mountain Health Co-op can help you start saving on services you use most. Mountain Health Co-op, keeping you covered when it counts.
We get going with that 2023 legislative session. I mean, it's January 2nd, actually, when it starts, and that's officially a holiday, and I guess. We're going to have special legislative reports on many of our affiliate stations. And again, thank you so much to all of our affiliates. I mean, they're in Billings and Bozeman and Glendive and Great Falls and Havre and Helena and Libby and Kalispell and Plentywood and Scobie. And yes, I'm reading this, Missoula and Miles City and Lewistown and Baker. Let me not forget Hamilton, which just signed on recently, too. We'll be covering legislative news like crazy with the Northern News Network upcoming here as well. So my thanks to John Binion. My thanks to Cody Ross, our in-studio engineer. My thanks to you as well for joining us. Tomorrow, I don't know yet, but we'll see you then.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.